And then I was going to say, sorry for interrupting your coitus. And then what it actually said was, sorry for interrupting your colitis. And I couldn't stop laughing for like an hour. I'm like, yes, I'm sorry for interrupting your butt infection. I was done. Welcome to the Rated Any Podcast, episode 94 for the website nerdappropriate.com. We're here to talk about all things nerdy, awesome, fun, video games, movies, all kinds of stuff. So stick with us.
Yay! Woo-hoo.
All right. So what have you guys been up to?
Wow. We'll pretend that wasn't your 10th try.
Hey, this is Matt's domain. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Through the magic of editing, that was a brilliant introduction by Hillary.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was great as well.
you doing okay there? Is everything all right?
Sorry, I'm on medicine right now.
Everybody's sick. That's the deal. It's been a weird week. Nobody has been online that I've seen. I know Ash has been battling the flu.
Yeah, or something.
Or something. Battling something.
Necromorphs, battling necromorphs in my soul.
Oh, yep.
No, you're battling colitis.
I am battling colitis.
Maybe you ended up getting that dysentery from trying to destroy the asteroid from last week's podcast.
That's possible. It's yeah. definitely possible.
Let's do the rundown.
On today's podcast, we're going to talk about the news about the PS4, which is almost here and was announced this week. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of spirited discussion about the PS4. Mass Effect announced the final two pieces of DLC, which are coming out within the next month or so, which includes single-player and multiplayer offerings. And then a lot of gaming websites are shut down following a recent acquisition. And what's up?
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer. And then in our reviews and discussion, we are going to be talking about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Are there any other words we can put after that? Hillary saw, I'm assuming this is a movie. Yes.
Yes. Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina. I think I went to school with her. And Ash saw Die Hard 5, and I played Paper Mario Sticker Star for the 3DS.
This is a weird episode. This is the weirdest lineup of stuff we've done in a while. It's like Die Hard, Paper Mario, Anna Karenina, which I have no idea what that is.
Hey, that's why you come here, for the variety, right?
That's true. Metal Gear.
You come for the variety and stay for the dick jokes.
Seriously. Oh. So it should be noted that Matt is not here this week because he... What should we say is wrong with him?
He turned into the grumpy cat.
The grumpy cat.
Yes.
There's a video, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a Harlem Shake video featuring the Grumpy Cat.
Have you seen this one?
You've seen the Harlem Shake videos, right?
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm gonna explain this in a way that's totally not going to be funny because you have to see it. But anyways, it gets to the part where the build-up starts and the Grumpy Cat's just sitting there. And then as soon as the beat hits, it just zooms on the cat with the text no at the bottom. And that's the end of the video. The whole video is like 11 seconds long.
That's actually pretty
cool. I love that.
It's classy. So now, without any further ado, Ash, do you want to try and tell us how you've been doing this week?
Yeah, sorry. I'm doing pretty well. I took a couple days off of work because I got some sort of sickness. And it's funny, being sick's actually like, it sucks because you feel horrible and you have mucus kind of emanating from all the holes in your body and you feel weak and sweaty and you're just like this disgusting, like, you know, grosso blob of a person.
You were a necromorph.
Yeah, I was definitely I felt like a necromorph. I like skittered down the halls with my arms like way up in the air, just kind of like frothing, you know, like
those ones that spit the goo out.
Yeah, that was totally me. But then there's this like really positive side about being sick. That's kind of like, I'm almost ashamed to say it, but it's great.
Kind of addicting.
Well, because you don't have to go to work.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, and you can like lay there and just like eat soup and be pathetic, and like people feel bad for you, and you're like, I'll just be sick and beat a couple video games and lay here for days on end. And it's like, it's so, and it's wonderful in its own way. But then if you're well and you lay there for days, you just feel like a lazy piece of shit. Yeah, yeah. You're like, oh my God, there's so many things I should be doing right now. But since you're sick, it's totally justifiable, you know?
I'm going to lick all the controllers at PAX East when I get there.
Oh, you'll get sick before you walk out of that hall.
Ew.
Because I really need to have like a Stargate marathon, and it's just not going to happen until I get the flu.
I've literally seen a kid with his hand down his pants and then take his hand out of his pants and touch one of the PAX controllers. So,
I can't wait.
Yeah.
So for anyone, little PAX travel tip for anyone that's never attended before, make sure you bring your own sanitizing solution use it vigorously at all opportunities.
Definitely.
Do you hear that? I just clapped. We haven't clapped on this podcast in a long time. Remember, we outlawed clapping, I think, around episode 20. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because someone used to clap.
Matt used to clap. When he was laughing real hard, he would lean back and go like that.
Clap, right? Yeah. You used to scratch your beard on the microphone.
Oh, yeah, I did. I remember I zoned out once and I started like rubbing my beard on the microphone because I had an itch.
Yeah.
It's good.
Everyone's like, why does this episode have all this fucking static? And like, that's not actually static. That's just hair noise.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's my bad.
Scott, what have you been up to?
Let's see.
I totally stole your thunder.
No, it's cool. Oh. It was a good transition anyways, whoever got it. But I've been playing SSX and Virtual High Five.
I was left hanging. Oh,
I'll get you.
Thank you.
So I've been playing SSX. Remember 2 years ago when they announced it and they were like, Deadly Descent, and everybody fucking hated it?
Yeah, because they had machine guns.
Yeah, what? The Deadly Descent part of the game, I still don't like it. Like, it imposes these weird challenges upon you where, like, you don't die because you can't die in this game, but, like, you can need to be airlifted off the mountain, like, if you run out of oxygen or if your armor breaks down and you're like, what does this have to do with, like, explosions and rave music, you know? I just want to do big tricks.
That's not the first time you've said that.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
My name's Scott, and I want to do big tricks. That's a sex joke.
That's the nighttime podcast. So I've been playing Paper Mario. I watched one of the last three episodes of Fringe that I can't bring myself to watch. And I've been playing a lot of Dead Space, which I still really like, and it's awesome.
Nice.
The only thing I don't like about Dead Space is, why does this game have to have instant death scenarios in it? You know, I feel like that's the cheapest thing in the game. Like, Mega Man-style spikes that you can just, like, if you brush your elbow against them, you instantly, like, turn into a puddle of, like, body parts.
Oh, there are a couple places like that, huh?
There's literally, there's a part in the game where you're climbing up the side of the mountain, the icy mountain, right? And there is a like a lift that's swinging from side to side along this mountain.
Oh yeah.
Right.
And it like barely touches you and you're like,
No, it's worse than that, because if you shoot it with stasis and then you walk up to it and like put your finger, if you touch it with your finger, instant death. And like last time I checked, I thought like as far as stasis goes and like the physics of the universe and the conservation of energy, I didn't really think that like it would still be able to kill you moving at like half a mile an hour, but
true,
you know, there you go.
If that's like the only qualm that we have with that game, then it's still fucking magnificent.
Oh, it's fucking awesome.
It's so good.
I love
this. Well, I just love that we're like all at the same spot and didn't even know it.
Yeah.
It's because it's like, it's a game that you could finish in 10 hours, but you don't want to. You want to like enjoy it like slowly, right? I think we're all on that same kind of boat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my week. So Hillary, what's going on with you?
So I'm going to start it the way I always start it and say I've been working a lot. So, which is fantastic, because some of the stuff I'm working on is for PAX.
Hey. Hooray!
Yay! So, BioWare is doing some amazing things that I can't wait to talk about. Can't say anything yet, but we'll be able to soon. And, just been doing that and playing some Dead Space. I saw a movie with Keira Knightley in it. Mm. And I've been reading a lot, which is great. And, pretty much boring, same old, same old. But, But you know what else is not boring?
What's that?
News.
That would be the PS4, because that's fantastic.
News.
And anyone who says not, bad. Sorry.
I was almost shocked at the level of excitement that you had for this on Twitter.
You always say that, Scott. I mean, you said that when I was excited about the Wii U, which I still haven't purchased.
I guess. I mean...
Well, yeah, you can skip that one for now.
Maybe I just tend to be highly skeptical. So let's talk about it.
All right. So Hillary and I both sat through the press conference for the PlayStation 4 reveal. And, you know, I kind of went in as a bit of a skeptic. I didn't know what to expect. But for me personally... I came out sold. I came out mm-hmm. wanting to buy this console day one. And I guess we can go through some of the reasons why in just a minute, but I do want to also see kind of your initial opinions on it, both Hillary and Scott.
Hillary, why don't you go first?
Okay, cool. So something that I thought was pretty innovative, were the, sharing capabilities. So being able to record your game as you're playing it and then share that with people and then have more co-op support. So like basically you and your friends can play and someone can take over who's maybe more experienced or whatever, but you're still within the same environment together. Something else I really thought was cool, obviously, were the graphics. I mean, it was gorgeous.
Let me ask you this something yeah. though. Do you know anyone who would ever allow one of their friends to beat a part for them in a game, like using that tool? Like I would never... Yeah. Really? I would never.
I mean, I don't know if I would do it. I might. I mean, I guess it really depends on the situation. But if someone, let's say you have a team of people and you're playing like an RPG and there's a huge end boss and you know that magic has to kill the end boss, but you're set up like a rogue and you don't have magic. Well, then that makes sense that someone else would maybe take over. But I guess it depends on the game and the skills or whatever. I mean, I guess if someone, I don't know, if someone had to take over my player.
Yeah. I think that's what they were suggesting, that like I could go into your game and mm-hmm. you can be like, hey, I'm having trouble I'm having trouble with this part in the game. And I would go, oh, let me do it. And I would just come through and kill three or four guys and go like, okay, back to you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can see people doing that, especially if they're interested in building up their gamer score for whatever reason. Like, let's say they are like a new, you know, gamer. I think that's a lot where I think the PS4 is trying to not only get like the hardcore gamers like us, but I think they're trying to introduce a system that is more appealing to newer gamers or the younger generation of gamers. So I think that someone could potentially want to do that, or maybe there's some redundant plot point or quest that needs to get done and someone's just like, I don't have time, can you just do this for me?
Are you talking about outsourcing? Can I outsource my gameplay?
Can you grind for me for a little bit?
I don't understand that functionality.
We are starting up a new business right now.
Yeah, seriously.
Where I help you beat parts of your video game for you.
Well, no, it's funny. People used to do this in WoW all the time. You could pay some poor person in a third world country to like level for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was sad.
Well, the fact that the PS4 now supports free-to-play models as well as episodic. I mean, that was huge. And the fact that Diablo is coming to PS3 and 4 is a little bit, it's I'm like, why is Blizzard here? This is crazy talk.
Yeah, but then when Blizzard showed up, everyone was like, collective sigh. Like, we could care fucking less about Diablo 3.
But just the fact that they have, a predominantly PC studio there was kind of like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean,
it is a huge shift for the console market. But yeah, I mean, I'm really obviously interested in the price and what it looks like, more so the price than what it looks like. I mean, I don't really care if it looks like a big black box. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. And honestly, it set the bar so high. I really want to know what Microsoft is thinking, because I have a feeling that they're going to blow me away too.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many in terms of the hardware itself. It's going to be, you know, seeing just the new Unreal Engine running, it looks so incredible, and I can't wait to actually see. And this is just like, you know, launch games look incredible.
Yeah.
In 3 or 4 years, it's going to look unbelievable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the new controller ideas, I don't know how the touchpad is going to work on the controller, but I think from what I've been hearing, the controller functions, it's a lot more precise than the last one. there's like less latency issues and things like that. The analog sticks are a lot tighter, which I hear is pretty nice.
Cool.
So I don't know. I'm really excited about it. I think they did all of the right things. You know, they just basically increased the horsepower and made a better machine with a lot more RAM and made the hardware a lot more accessible to developers. It's running on PC architecture now, I guess, instead of their own strange architecture from the PS3.
Can I throw out just an outlandish prediction right now in case this ever does come true?
Sure.
I'm going to predict a PlayStation Steam merger in the future.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
So you heard it here first if that ever happens. We don't have to talk about it. I just want to put it out there.
Interesting. Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, so...
So come in with the negative stuff, Scott.
Yeah, I'm excited for next gen, but I don't know that I'm excited for PS4. And okay. Let me tell you why, because they talked about all this like sharing capability and video posting and sharing. I tried to watch the announcement from PlayStation Home thinking like, oh, that might be cool, right? I'll go to PlayStation Home. I'm sure they'll have something set up there. I was able to watch about 5 minutes of the press conference with an audio lag on the video, and then the mm-hmm. video crashed altogether and I wasn't able to watch any of it. And then I had to go online and like I couldn't load Ustream. So it took me like maybe 10 or 15 minutes just to get reconnected with the video again. And like, if you're trying to sell me on this idea of like streaming games and posting video and sharing video and streaming gameplay between like people in different locations, I think that it's going to take something of a monumental effort to make that work efficiently. Does that make sense?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you're relying on your audience to have a really exceptional internet connection, and there's still a large portion of the country that does not. I mean, we talk about this all the time in this podcast. There's like a major like chunk of our country can't have that sort of a streaming capability. Even right now, like I live in a major metropolitan city and I cannot stream things on my Xbox. Like the things that stream on the Xbox home screen, they won't stream without lagging up, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can envision like good and bad scenarios. Like I can envision a scenario in which, you know, kind of like what's available on PC now, or like some friends get together and like maybe I'm streaming something and you're bored and you don't feel like playing. So you're just like, oh, let me see what Scott's doing. And like maybe you
can
check,
spectate.
Yeah. You watch me play Dead Space for a couple of minutes and you're like, oh, that's cool. Or like, I want to show you something in Assassin's Creed or whatever. And like, I think that is awesome. But then they said a couple of things like, they're like, and then you could watch your favorite celebrities play games. And I was like, what? Wait, hold on. What? Wait a second. You know, like, to me, that sounds like it's opening up avenues for advertising as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
to
be definitely.
Like, so, I mean, from like, I don't necessarily want to watch like strangers. I don't want to spectate strangers or watch videos from strangers play games. You know, like I want to be connected with my friends. And I think, you know, I think that's what the appeal is for me, at least. And I know that that's, you know, I'm just probably an outlier there, because I feel like a lot of people want to like post their videos and share them. And, that being said, I really think there's going to be two types of videos that you'll be able to find on the PlayStation Network when this happens. There's going to be gameplay videos like you find on YouTube, tutorials, right? And then there's going to be the kind you don't want, which are videos of bugs and stupid things that are happening and videos about like exploits, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And people trolling each other and like, you know, griefing each other over and over again and teabagging each other.
Yeah, so I hope Sony is ready for the, quote, internet to arrive on its...
Yeah.
On its platform, if you know what I mean. So, you know, but, you know, like, I guess I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to be sort of a little subjective and skeptical about like what they're saying, you know, cause it's an advertising presentation. You know, they didn't tell you how much it costs or like exactly when it's coming out or exactly what the hardware is going to look like. They just kind of like, they kind of gave you like a tease of like, mm-hmm. here are some games and like, this kind of looks cool. And like, here's the controller and that's, we'll see later, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm really excited about it. It might just be because I'm excited about next gen kind of as you are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of how I feel, today, if it were available today, would I buy it? Absolutely. Would I buy it at like a $600 price point? Probably. But it really depends on what Microsoft has to say. I mean, if they come out and they're doing all of this plus more, I mean, that's going to kind of kill it, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, this came after a week in which like every third time I opened Hulu, I was able to get into it. And mm-hmm. I wasn't able to watch a video on Sony's network that Sony was broadcasting. So
yeah, I had to watch it through IGN.
Yeah, I'm excited for next gen if it just works, you know?
Yeah.
Like obviously, like at the core of all this, we want to play the games, but all this extra stuff they're adding on really needs to be, I think, a little better in its execution.
Well, what do you guys think about like the predictive technology? They have something where it's based on your behaviors, and the software is so intelligent that it recognizes the things that you like to play and pre-downloads those and offers them to you. What do you think about that?
If it works well, again, that's great. But mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of scary, but at the same time, I mean, it'd be nice if I wouldn't have to get on and, you know, patch something for a half an hour before I got to play.
I think
there's some days where I only have an hour to play. Yeah. So a half an hour patching is half my fucking time. So if it can get rid of all that, that's great.
It should be able to work well, and I should also be able to turn it off if I want to.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Don't you think?
Well, and then something that I thought was cool is they said that, you know, downloads can happen while the unit is asleep. And the tagline that I got out of one presentation was, you can have everything that you want instantly. And I'm like, wow, are they going to come into my house and fix my AT&T internet?
Yeah.
Because that would be awesome.
I mean, it's cool that you could like start playing a demo, you know, get that instant gratification of playing a demo. Like, I think those are good ideas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think realistically speaking, you'll be able to manage that because they can't just put stuff on your hard drive if you want to use that space for other things, you know? So I feel like you should be able to have some kind of control over how that works.
Well, and I think, did they say that the hard drive is 8 gig or something? I feel like I heard that.
Oh, really? That's cool. Or do you mean like 800?
No, they have 800. Oh, sorry. They have 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
And then the hard drive's going to be massive. I don't know exactly what size it is, but it's going to be a big, big hard drive.
We have another.
I was thinking. Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that I think my Xbox is like 250 gig. So I was like, that's not impressive at all.
How is it? Do you almost have it full? I think I've got like 80 gigs left, which is surprising.
No, I have a lot left because I switched late in life. I had to delete a bunch of stuff when I had the older Xbox.
Mm-hmm. So. We have a comment from Matt, fellow NA member Matt. He says, my 2 cents on the PS4, if it's under 500 at launch, I'm in, but it feels like a Frankenstein machine of the Kinect, Smart Glass, Wii U, OnLive, and Steam, but it's interesting. So what do you think about this whole, you know, it seems to have a lot of crap built into it.
It mm-hmm. does. I think it kind of looked at everything that the other consoles had going for it and kind of stole. Like, literally, I started laughing because I was watching this and Hillary was watching it at the same time. We were kind of chatting as the presentation was going on. But when they showed their, like, rip-off Kinect sensor, I just kind of started laughing. I was like, oh, wow, they have a Kinect, too. So they have, like, a Wii U touchpad, a Kinect sensor. They have just, like, everything built into this machine. But you know what? It's like, fuck it, why not? Like,
sure,
if all of it works well, why not rip everybody off, you know what I mean? I think it just is going to need the titles to support all those bells and whistles, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, something that we haven't even brought up yet was the presentation started talking a lot about the PS Vita, and I'm like, what? And people online were thinking, oh no, is this a Vita presentation? What? So there's a lot of, you know, functionality, cross-functionality between the PS4 and the PS Vita. So basically it's becoming more mobile. But
it's kind of like the Wii U, you know, the whole idea of like streaming your console game on your handheld.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, now that means you need to buy the Vita as well. So, you know, there's a funny abbreviated press conference out on YouTube that's hilarious. And it's like, please buy a Vita. Please buy a Vita. So that made me laugh. So, I mean, I think that's interesting and cool technology, but at the same time, you know, that we're ratcheting up the price a bit.
Absolutely.
If you want there's the kind full of like experience.
There's kind of like a hidden cost built in of needing to get this Vita if you want to have like all the bells and whistles, I think.
And the other issue that I don't think anybody's talked about either is, so let's say you buy the new Xbox, whatever it is, and the PS4, which online subscription are you going to pay for?
Oh yeah. I mean, we didn't hear anything about the price. We don't know how the pricing models are going to change for mm-hmm. either system. You know, like they didn't even say if it would be free to post these videos or not, you know, or maybe you would get like so much space for free, but if you want to post a lot of videos, you need to pay like some kind of account fee to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there, I mean, like that's why from this press conference, I felt like it was lacking in a lot of the details that I think would help somebody decide whether or not they wanted to buy the machine. They really just like,
I think they're waiting for E3.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll have to wait until, geez, what is it?
June,
first week of June, and then first week of June, we'll probably have a little bit more information about what exactly, you know, probably what it's going to cost and some more of the details. But
mm-hmm. I just wonder about the timing. Do you think that they announced the PS4 because of earning reports? Like maybe they needed a little boost in their stock price. So they're like, well, we'll just do a pre-announcement of our new thing. And then, you know, we'll get into the nuts and bolts.
Well, I think it was genius. I mean, while it was probably very expensive for them to have a press conference of that size and everything, I still think that the spotlight was on them that whole day, at least. And that if they were to reveal something like that at E3, they're going to be sharing a lot of that spotlight with other things. And that was really smart of them to do that. And it looks like, you know, Xbox is going to be doing the same thing. And this is probably, you know, to the folks that run E3, they're probably pretty upset, but it's like, well, sorry, like this is the way it's going to be from now on. You're going to see these big press conferences, Microsoft and, you know, Apple style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, it's a little early. I mean, it feels like, you know, we're 4 months away from E3. That's a third of a year. And, you know, if Microsoft starts making noise about their Xbox, whatever, pretty much no one's going to remember Sony. You know, that's why I feel like it's kind of strange that they did it so early. I mean, I could see it happening in like April more than I can see it happening in February, mm-hmm. you know? So that's why I think maybe there's something behind it, like corporate wise. They wanted a boost in the valuation or something.
But what I was really surprised about was how the general, I guess, opinion of this press conference was very positive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think most people at this point are relatively excited about the PS4. I mean, I was not prior to this press conference. And then they started saying the things that I wanted to hear, like, you know, easier online connectivity, faster speeds, you know, everything that I really wanted out of the PS3 that I didn't get is now going to be on the PS4. So
like a hybrid sleep mode for your console, too. How cool is that?
That's awesome.
It's really
cool. For a guy that leaves his console on like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, oops.
Anything else about the PS4?
It looks gorgeous.
We'll probably talk about it more soon.
All right. Well, let's move on to our bread and butter, you guys, and that is Mass Effect. And the final two pieces of DLC for Mass Effect 3 that were announced, Citadel and Reckoning, not to be confused with the Recockening. coming out within the next month. Single player and multiplayer offerings.
Isn't Recockening next week?
I think so.
I cannot take all this cockening.
It's too much. Too much to take.
Cockening. Oh, it just makes me sore and tired.
Dude, like I still like every once in a while I'll still get back into that multiplayer and I still really love it.
It's really good. I almost wish I didn't have 20 games to play right now so I could just play that. I still see some folks on my friends list that are exclusively playing Mass Effect multiplayer.
Oh, I love it. I think that's great.
That is all they play.
That is great.
They must be so fucking good at that game by now. I don't even bother playing with them anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, so yeah, it comes out Tuesday, and then the single player content, the Citadel DLC, comes out on the 5th. So
let's talk about Citadel first, and then move on to Recockening. Now, I'm excited for Citadel because they haven't revealed too much stuff. I'm going to read their little press release very quickly, so that way I don't get anyone in trouble. So I'm reading the BioWare press release, and it says, "When a sinister conspiracy targets Commander Shepard, you and your team must uncover the truth. Through battles and intrigue that range from the glamour of the Citadel's wards to the top secret council archives, uncover the truth and fight alongside your squad, as well as the cast from the original Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2, including Erdnott Rex." So cool, right?
Yeah, so cool.
I mean, yeah. And it says, okay, when the adventure is over, reconnect with your favorite characters from the Mass Effect trilogy, try your luck at Citadel's Silver Coast Casino, blow off steam in the Armex Combat Arena, or explore and furnish Shepard's own living quarters on the Citadel with unique content and cinematics featuring your friends and romance interests in the Mass Effect trilogy. Mass Effect 3 Citadel offers one final chance to see the characters you have known for years and rekindle.
This is like super awesome fan service.
It's basically like BioWare is giving me a really like soapy back massage.
Yeah, I mean after I mean like the number one comment that I think that you would see following the original conclusion of the game was that like people just wanted more time with their virtual buddies, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this is going to scratch that itch and add some gameplay and some like cool endgame stuff where you can just hang out in the Citadel and like dick around, and it sounds really exciting, you know.
I do. I like. I'm interested to see because they make it sound like pretty much this DLC is going to have everybody in it.
Yeah,
I'm curious like at what capacity, you know, if it is. What I would love would be almost this is going to sound ridiculous, but almost like a recreation of the final fight from Mass Effect 2, where you have literally all your squaddies go off and they're all, you know, doing different things on the Citadel and fighting. And it's kind of like one large scale battle. I mean, that was like honestly one of my favorite sequences in any game of all time was the end of Mass Effect 2.
Oh, yeah. Because, Mass Effect 2 is brilliant.
Yeah, everybody, like, you're all in it together, you know, and you just got this is war kind of feeling. So if they could somehow recreate that, and unfortunately I felt like that feeling was a little bit absent from the end of 3. Because it ramps up so quickly and it didn't, you know, you never got to see what happened with, you know, all those people that you were.
And you didn't really get to spend a lot of time with the people, like, as you were saying goodbye to them in London, you know, as you were kind of making your way through the base and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the idea is that this is going to help people sort of say goodbye to Shepard and Shepard's story. And I think that it's all good stuff. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I can't wait to see it out. And yeah, so it comes out March 5th and it's $15 or 1,200 Microsoft points or 1,200 BW points. So I guess that's BioWare points.
Oh.
I didn't know about that. So yeah, it should be awesome.
March 5th is going to be quite an active day.
It is. I just can't wait to hang out with Caden some more.
I think Tomb Raider comes out on that day too. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally crazy.
I think other games.
Definitely excited for that one. And then, of course, the Rekakening DLC. I just think it's amazing that they're still able to offer these multiplayer DLC packs up for free.
Yeah.
So, you know, it looks like there's going to be, you know, even more guns. I think they said 5 or 6 new guns, character classes, some new maps. It's kind of ridiculous. And also they went on record saying, and I'm not going to get anyone in trouble because they actually said this on Twitter, but this DLC, the Citadel DLC, not the Rekakening DLC, the Citadel DLC is so large that they actually had to split it in two. It's actually almost 4 gigabytes.
Holy crap. Mm-hmm.
So it is a massive piece of DLC. I mean, obviously it's going to be double the size of Omega. So, you know, there's just going to be a lot of stuff in there.
And something to think about, too, is that the original Xbox only had 4 gigabytes of hard drive.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
It's like more than half a disk. Like gigabytes is more than half a disk.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Cool. Do you have anything to read from the Reckoning? I think there was a release for that too.
There was. I don't have it in front of me, so let's move on.
Well, that's going to be free, and it's going to be awesome, and I'm sure we'll be playing it. So
you have the Geth Juggernaut, the Cabal Vanguard, Talon Mercenary, and Alliance Infiltration Unit, and more.
And others.
Yeah, and others. Yeah, and some new weapons. So fun
it's
stuff.
Be exciting.
I like how there's talent mercenaries finally. I've wanted them from the very beginning.
Ooh, smash your enemies with the biotic hammer as you lay waste to the battlefield.
Have you seen the screenshot of the biotic hammer?
I did. It's crazy.
Oh my god, it looks insane.
That's so awesome.
They'll play the crap out of that too.
Cool. And although this podcast will come out after this weekend, they're doing a pretty cool challenge weekend this too, in honor of the voice actor who played...
Zaid.
Zaid, yeah. It's called, what is the name of the operation called? Man, I'm just Johnny on the spot with information.
Tribute.
Yeah, it's called Tribute. And if you play Tribute, yeah, there's a banner. And it's funny because one of the challenges is to earn 50,000 points with the Avenger, which is like collecting dust in my virtual gun for locker real. Right now.
Yeah, poor Robin Sachs.
Yeah.
He killed a Zaid. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. Bummer. All right, so what's next on our list? Oh, Hillary, tell us about this sad stuff. I read a little bit about this. The news story is 1UP, Yugo, and GameSpy have all shut down. So what do you know?
Yeah, so I just put this in here because obviously it's some huge news. But yeah, 1UP, Yugo, and GameSpy have been shut down as IGN sees some layoffs. Ugh, I can't even talk. I'm so verklempt about this whole thing. Yeah. No, so I feel like we've seen a shift in a lot of gaming journalism that a lot of sites and publications are going by the wayside. So what do you think that means?
I mean, 1UP, and I used to have an account at GameSpy back in, geez, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And 1UP had been doing a podcast for a really long time, and they're just kind of staples, you know. And it's interesting when you do see this shift and you see these new companies like Polygon pop up and start to get a lot of the spotlight just because of the pedigree of their site and kind of their new look and new MO and stuff. But it's sad to see these old sites, you know, disappear. I don't wish it upon anyone, but it does seem like the internet knows what it wants, and it seems like it's going to really just a handful of outlets for all of their information. You know what I mean? There's probably, in all honesty, there's probably only maybe a dozen sites right now that get tons of traffic based on, you know, their product. So there's just not room for everyone.
Well, it's interesting too. I mean, if you look at this in the broader context of, you know, like G4 going away and changing, and the fact that, you know, there was a statement by a representative that said, we're focusing on our two flagship brands, IGN and Ask Men. And, you know, the rumor about G4 is that it's turning into more like GQ.
Yeah, it's going to be Esquire Network.
Interesting.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I'm this seems to be a shift in that same direction, which I don't know. It kind of doesn't sit well with me a little bit, but we'll have to see what happens. I feel like we're going more skewed toward male audience.
Yeah, I think females still like to play video games. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and I feel like we're only growing. So, you know, the last market share data was, you know, basically 50-50 with who's buying the games. So I don't know why the shift is so male oriented and heterosexual male oriented, you know? So
Yeah,
I don't know.
Kind of a head scratcher.
Scott brought up a good point, I think, on last week's episode where he was just talking about the term link bait and how a lot of these sites are pretty much using sensational headlines, almost like the days of yellow journalism, you know, back in the old history. The idea that you just put up an incredibly bold or sensational title just to attract everyone, you know, just to make sure people hit it. And then once you get to the actual article itself, either has nothing to do with what the link says or or the article's, you know, half a paragraph and it's a total piece of crap. So it's weird, but that's the way that games journalism is heading now. And even though, like, I don't necessarily agree 100% with how Polygon operates and things like that, but they're trying to, you know, actually be journalists and actually investigate and ask the right questions and things like that. So I think that's the good way to go.
Well, it's kind of like how Fox News put out that story this week about the new AC3 DLC, which I have not gotten to play yet, which I'm super sad about. Yeah. The AU Tyranny of Washington DLC, which I totally want to play. But yeah, they put out a thing like, video games, bad Ubisoft, French developer trying to rewrite history and blah, blah, blah. And like, it sounded really, really bad. So when you clicked on it and actually read the article, it wasn't that bad.
It was kind of like their headline of what the infamy was all about was written like what you would see when you were looking at your television guide for a movie that you knew very well. And then when you read the description, you're like, I don't think that's what that's about, you know?
Yeah.
The headline was like, French game company allows players to murder American president.
Yeah.
Or like, something. Yeah, it's
just
really
a sensationalist. It was crazy. And, you know, there are a lot of games journalists that do that with their titles. So, I mean, that's not exactly what we were really talking about with the fall of 1UP and Yugo and stuff. But I think it's just the industry is changing very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And who knows what it's going to be like in the next year, 2 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, with that being said, we'll take a small break, and then we'll find out, is Metal Gear Rising Revengeance going to make you kill your dog? Find out after the break.
To answer Scott's question, no, it will not make you kill your dog. But there is a really cool robotic dog in this game, which is kind of ironic that you mentioned a dog. So for those of you who don't know much about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, it is a kind of hack and slash Twitch title developed by Platinum Games that follows Raiden on an adventure throughout the Metal Gear universe. It functions a lot like a Bayonetta, in that there's a lot of, you know, really detailed combos. There's a counter system, unlockable move sets and things like that. I mean, in all honesty, if I were to compare it to anything, it would be Bayonetta. So, you know what you're getting when you play Revengeance. The cool thing is that this story, even if you don't really like Raiden, it definitely fits within the Metal Gear universe. It takes place after Metal Gear Solid 4. So, spoiler alert, there's no Snake in this game. Mm. But there are some surprise cameos by characters from the other Metal Gear games. And it follows Raiden. It starts off with his origin about how he becomes Bionic. So you have this like origin story about, you know, his past and how he got to be so messed up. And then it follows him on an adventure to not only, you know, he's basically trying to stop the privatization of war, and which was a big theme in the Metal Gear series, the fact that there's all these shadow governments manipulating war throughout the world, and they're using like machines and bionics to try and like push their own agenda and such. And so he's kind of thrust into the middle of this big global conspiracy theory, and he's trying to stop bad stuff from happening. It has Metal Gear style bosses, so the bosses are all really creative, and you have to beat them each in, you know, a very unique way. So you know, you can't beat the boss the same way every time. The thing that's great about this is like one thing I hate about boss fights in general, and that's one of the reasons why we picked our inappropriate question of the week. One reason I hate some boss fights in games is because it all of a sudden you throw out all the mechanics that you've been learning throughout the entire game.
Yeah,
and then you have to learn something else new entirely, right? Mm-hmm. This game doesn't do that. It lets you still use all the moves you've been accumulating throughout the game. You just have to be better with them. So your counters still work, right? And your sword still works. And like, you are still you. You don't have to do anything fucking crazy. You don't have to like pilot a different, you know, mech or something weird like that.
Or do you like a God of War Street Fighter final boss battle?
God of War. Well, there's definitely some quick timey shit going on here.
Well, I think in a God of War game, like you throw out all of your moves, and then it in the end becomes like a Street Fighter battle between two gargantuan characters in the game.
Yeah, yeah, it's not quite like that.
Let me ask you a question about this Metal Gear game. How do you like receive a game when sort of the core gameplay of the franchise has shifted so much into something different? So it's like the same kind of like narrative, but different gameplay.
That's a great question. I think if anyone other than Platinum had done it, it would have felt strange. The fact that they do fighting so well made this game work. There's still a bit of stealth. You're not playing a Snake, so you don't need to be as stealthy. So Raiden is obviously not a stealthy kind of character, but he can be. So you can get instant kills on guys if you sneak up behind them. You can
Cool.
down on enemies kind of a la Dishonored or Far Cry. You know, you can get stealth kills if you pace yourself. The main mechanic of this game is definitely the swordplay. So you've probably seen videos of this before, but the sword is sort of the main character of the game. So you build up your super meter, and then once your super meter reaches a certain level and your enemy's armor is depleted enough, you can kind of go into like sword mode, and you can actually control the angle that you cut in. If you hit an enemy in their sweet spot, you can expose their core or their spine, and then you can actually take their life sustenance from the core. So you're doing all this in like as fast as humanly possible, because it's like Bayonetta, right?
Sounds kind of batshit crazy.
Something. Did I say something perverted?
Yeah, you doing okay, Hillary?
Sorry. You're talking about swordplay and angles.
You're always thinking about dicks. I don't even... I don't.
No, I'm not. But do they ever explain why Revengeance?
No, they never explain why Revengeance. Well, okay, so I can't explain why it's about why the title is called Revengeance without revealing a major plot spoiler. But there is some revengeance that happens.
So, and that would be revenge and vengeance together.
One would think
revenge and vengeance mashed together.
Revengeance.
Cool stuff that you're not really hearing too much about with this game. You do get a robotic dog who becomes your friend throughout the title and is sort of like your sidekick. I had read that initially there were supposed to be game mechanics that involved the dog, but due to some production difficulties, you don't actually get to control the dog. He's just kind of there in cutscenes.
They had to move some people over to Anarchy Reigns.
Yeah, probably.
That's why you didn't get your dog.
So there is a dog in it. He's pretty cool. The plot, you know, has its ups and downs. There are some surprises. It's pretty good. The main thing I want to talk about, though, before I move on away from it, is it's about probably a 6 to 7 hour total to beat. So start to be on normal mode is about 6 to 7 hours. Difficulty, you know, it kind of varies throughout the title.
Let me guess, though, this is a game that you're meant to play over and over again for time and points.
That's the thing. So Platinum has this, there's no real replayability other than trying to get like S ranks on everything. S rank on something is like almost impossible.
It's very Japanese.
You have to not get hit. And like you're talking about, there's like a dozen guys swinging on you and you have to not get hit. And you can't like miss with your sword and crazy shit like that. It's like, I don't understand how anyone would ever get S rank on everything in this game.
Or why you would want to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is the only real replayability. You get points that you can use to unlock moves and things like that. So if you want to play through it again and unlock more moves and wigs and all sorts of strange things, you can do that. But that's, you know, one of the faults I had with other platinum titles, including Vanquish, is there's no real reason to ever revisit it. The end boss to this game was so hard. I almost lost it.
Granted, is it like Bayonetta hard? Because that was pretty difficult too.
Dude, I had a harder time with this one than the ending boss to Bayonetta.
Oh my god.
The boss has, I want to say, 6 or 7 different phases, or stages, if you will. And they're each one's like increasingly more difficult. And so you have to master every single pattern. Like you have to get it down pat, because what happened with me is I beat the boss, which shocker is a Metal Gear, you know.
Okay.
Here, the ending boss is always a Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Then there is another boss after the Metal Gear, which I can't reveal because I'll spoil stuff. But I didn't know there was going to be another boss after the boss, and so I used all my health packs and all my shit up, right? Thinking that the game was going to be over. So I'm just like kind of, you know, blowing through all my fun stuff that I have, rockets and all that stuff. And then the real boss comes out, and I died repeatedly probably 100 times.
Whoa.
It took me over 2 hours. And what I had to end up doing was fight the boss and get him to a certain health percentage without getting hit. More or less, because he can kill you in like 2 or 3 hits, this boss. So you could get hit a couple times, but more or less you'd have to fight him to a certain point without getting touched. And then he goes into another phase and you're able to kind of whittle him down from there. But it was pretty much having to be 100% perfect.
I'm surprised you didn't throw your controller.
I almost, I think it was because I was on cough medicine.
Oh, that's how you were able to play for 2 hours, because you were in the haze of...
I was a little messed up.
Yeah.
But
like, it's okay, dude. Let's try this again.
Yeah.
I highly recommend this game if you like action games, if you like, you know, hack and slash type games. If you are a Metal Gear fan and you want a little bit more from the universe, it definitely is a Metal Gear game. So check it out. It's pretty good.
Cool.
Cool. So I watched a movie.
Neat.
That's my contribution to the reviews. So Leo Tolstoy, which is probably one of the most renowned authors on the planet who has ever existed, wrote a book a long time ago called Anna Karenina. And now this is the movie that is about this book. So the same guy who directed like Pride and Prejudice and Atonement directed this. He obviously has a fascination with Keira Knightley, who I also have a fascination with. And the majority of the movie is close-ups of her face. And to be fair, she's got a beautiful face. So,
sounds good.
Yeah. The thing is, this movie, if you're interested in this type of story, it's very dark. It's very sad. It's very well written. However, the pace of the movie is a little bit slow. I mean, you got to really like love something about this movie, either Akira or the director or something. But yeah, overall, it was kind of trying to be like Moulin Rouge. And it didn't really get there, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, it's out. It just came out this week. If you're interested, it's on demand. It'll be on Netflix next week. If you're interested in some pretty dark literature and you like Keira Knightley, I suggest you see this. If you don't, then skip it.
Huh. Yeah.
I like Keira Knightley.
I do too.
She's gorgeous in this movie.
Cool.
What was that movie where she played the bounty hunter?
Oh, that Domino. Was a great movie. Yeah, Domino.
Yeah.
It's great. Like Domino.
It's a good one.
It's good. Cool. Very quickly, I went and saw Die Hard 5. It was part of my Valentine's Day gift from my
Die Hard. I know what the other part was.
And not colitis.
Oh, my goodness.
So 93 to hear that.
Too far.
So, yeah, we went and saw Die Hard, and it's not a good movie. That's the short version. It's not a terrible movie, but it's also not a Die Hard movie.
What?
Think about Die Hard, you think about kind of survival against impossible odds and like the underdog winning against, mm-hmm. like, you know, bad guys. And me, I think of New York City, mm-hmm. and I think of, you know, the hero of New York, John McClane, or you know, so that's what I think of. This movie takes place in Russia. It stars, of course, Bruce Willis as John McClane again, and he's going to rescue his son, John McClane Jr.
Are you serious?
Well, his name is Jack, but he is John McClane Jr.
Okay.
And he is played by the Australian actor Jai Courtney, which is a made-up name. It's a real name. First of all, Jai Courtney looks like a fucking linebacker. The guy is just huge. So Bruce Willis looks like a a drowned rat standing next to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Bruce Willis is trying to play this tough guy, but it's like his son is just this hulking, you know, 20-year-old dude, and here's Bruce Willis, who's like, I don't know, 97 years old by now.
Oh, no.
They should have used JGL in his Bruce Willis makeup.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, long story short, it is, it's nonstop action. Some of the action's ridiculous. It's rated R, so there's people exploding, and there's cursing, and if it was ever going to be rated PG-13, I'd probably cry because that was
part sounds like a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, so it's the problem is having the setting in Russia is just kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
Does he say yippee-ki-yay?
He does, of course. Yeah,
it sounds like you're describing the plot to Taken 3.
Well, it is kind of like that, and like there's this massive government conspiracy, and they end up at Chernobyl at some point, and there's like
what.
Nuclear warheads, and they're like running around Chernobyl, and like it just gets to be like it honestly. And Scott, you're gonna be mad, but it seemed more like a rejected Bond plot than it
did. Oh,
so it's like this vast conspiracy with all these different terror cells and things like that. Where Die Hard was just kind of pulpy,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be fun, kind of have like a fun edge to it,
yeah. So, you know, right now, I mean, I hate to pull up like Rotten Tomatoes and things like that, but it has like a 5 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, that's a bummer. Those movies are fun to watch.
Yeah, but it is definitely, if you want to see some explosions for a few hours, check it out. Yeah. Die Hard 5.
Awesome. So before you jump into yours, Scott, I just have to say that I saw Skyfall as well. Ooh. And it's my favorite Bond movie.
Really? That movie has a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I really like that movie. So I figured I'd tell you.
So, I mean, you were cool with sort of the different nature and tone of this particular film?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, the thing that kind of turned me off to the Bond, like, I'm not a Bond fan. So, like, I like the movies, but I'm not a fan. So maybe it was more appealing to someone like me who's, like, familiar with the concept and kind of likes Bond. But, I mean, the campiness always turns me off to it a bit.
Well, that's why 80s Bond films are campy.
Yeah, but that's why I like this one, because it was more exploring him as a character, and I loved the Scottish house and the darkness and his relationship with M and the whole thing. I thought it was awesome. I was riveted.
Sort of the general plot of the movie doesn't really follow sort of what a normal Bond movie would follow, but aside from that, the rest of the movie was like total fan service to anyone that had seen the previous 22 films or whatever. So.
Right.
You like it. I mean, it's a good opinion. Like, it's a sort of an outsider's opinion on the series, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more excited to see the next Bond film because of Skyfall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that was a good impromptu review.
Anyway, so you played some games.
Ash, do you have something to say? I think your audio cut out.
Oh, I was just going to say the critics, if you're looking for the critics tomato meter on a good day to Die Hard, it's actually at 16%.
Oh, okay.
And then the audience is at 50%, but the 16%.
That's bad.
It's brutal. Really,
oh, man. Yeah.
Okay. So finally, in the reviews, I finally picked up Paper Mario Sticker Star for the 3DS. And while the name sounds ridiculous, it totally sounds like a kid's game because it has stickers in it. It's actually a really kind of cool take on the Paper Mario series. And for those of you that are not familiar, Paper Mario is sort of a series that spun off of the traditional Mario games in sort of the vein of the Mario RPG game that came out for Super Nintendo a long time ago, which was a straight up like RPG. Paper Mario sort of started out as an RPG as well, and has slowly kind of changed into more of an action puzzle-oriented game. But the whole idea is that everything in the world is made out of paper. So with this premise in mind, they kind of use the idea that everything is two-dimensional, and they kind of take that idea and turn it on its head. So they take, like, sort of the two-dimensional nature of the original Mario games, and they just sort of make it the thing. So Mario is flat, everything is made out of paper. When he turns to the side, he disappears, that kind of thing. So and what makes these games different than other Mario games is that there's a lot of dialogue, sort of RPG style dialogue, where a lot of the characters in the games are toads, obviously, so you talk to the toads and they make these like funny jokes about like
one toad.
What's up?
There's more than one toad.
Yeah, there's like a whole, like, a toad is sort of like a race. There's like a race of toads. Yeah.
No way.
So there's all these little guys, and like, they're like Smurfs, different colored hats and stuff like that, you know?
That's blowing my mind.
Yeah. So the toads are kind of like your squad of people. And the whole joke about Paper Mario in general is that like everyone like is, they always say, oh, it's the famous Mario. Like, what are you going to do now? Are you going to save us from Bowser? And all the toads like look up to him and they're like, help us, you know, save us, Mario, you're so awesome. And sometimes Luigi's in the game and he obviously gets snubbed, as he often does in these games. But in this particular game, in Sticker Star, the whole idea of the game is, imagine doing RPG style turn-based combat, but with a sticker book. So each of your stickers is sort of like an attack that you can perform against the enemies. So you basically take the traditional Mario game, like stomping and throwing fireballs and doing that kind of thing, and you turn those into attacks that you select from your, quote, sticker book. So if I want to stomp on a Goomba, I select my boot, and then he executes the boot attack on the Goomba.
Hmm.
And the thing that they've added to all of these games is it's a turn-based game, but the attacks have timing elements. So if you execute the move, and as Mario's doing the move, if you tap the A button at the right time, like right as you stomp on the Goomba, you get extra damage points. So it's kind of Huh?
Is it interesting?
Yeah, there's a little twist on the combat. And then the rest of the game is really just exploring these sort of paper environments, and they do a lot of cool things with the paper. And because it's in 3D, now you have this sense of depth. So what ends up happening is that everything in the game looks like a shadow box, if that makes sense. You know, so like the trees are in the foreground and like the mountains are in the background, and they can do a lot of cool things with that effect. And the 3D looks really good too. And the other thing that happens is what you end up doing is you solve puzzles in the game using stickers. So you have these sort of special stickers that you use for boss fights and to open up new areas in the environment. But like I said, I think the thing that really makes it work, even in comparison to like the Wii game, which was really great, was the fact that this game is in 3D. And it's just, unless you see it, it's really hard to explain, because you can do things like folding characters in half and like folding environments in half, because it's all made out of paper and it all kind of works. Does that make sense?
That's cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So
I mean, I guess I'm kind of curious like who this game is for though. Cause parts of it sound so incredibly juvenile where I like couldn't, mm-hmm. like, you know, it does definitely doesn't appeal to me, but then you say there's these kind of turn-based RPG elements, and I'm like, well, I love that kind of stuff, but do I love it enough to kind of immerse myself in, like, you know, the world of Mario again? And me, probably not, but I understand right. that, like, for people that love RPGs and still have a little bit of the Nintendo nostalgia, it might be something that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like, if you... Yeah, because the game has this weird meta humor, like self-awareness about itself, so if you're a Nintendo fan and you like that type of gameplay, it ends up being a really fun game to play because the visuals work really well and the humor is pretty good, like, if you're a fan of these types of games. So, and there's just a lot of stuff to remember, too. Like, you end up having to revisit levels to unlock things that you were not able to unlock before. So there will be, like, an outline of a door. So you go, like, okay, I need a sticker of a door so I can come back here and I place my door sticker on this, like, door outline, and then it creates this secret passage that wasn't available before, and that's kind of how the puzzles work in the game. So that is Paper Mario Sticker Star, probably kind of a niche thing, but it's just an interesting game. Like, for people that are kind of down on Nintendo, it's worth looking at as, I would say, one of their more creative series that they have running right now.
Interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, cool. I'm glad you checked it out.
Yeah.
How is the boss fight on that?
I don't want to go too long on this, but it's funny, like, you're supposed to have the right items for the bosses. So, like, you do, like, maybe 5 or 6 damage at a time, and the first boss I encountered had, like, 96 health. So I literally attacked him about 30 times. And after I beat the boss, my little, like, Nintendo likes to use helpers in their games. So my little helper pops out at the end and he goes, "Man, you really did use a lot of stickers there. I bet there was a much easier way to beat that boss." And I was like, "No." I was like, "You're a dick. You could have told me that earlier." Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
fuck you, helper guy. Whatever. So anyways, we're going to come back with our Nequato, which is all about boss fights. And this question is, what was the most difficult and or rewarding video game boss fight that you've ever beaten? Which is awesome.
Hi, this is Courtney Taylor. You're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Ta-da!
What was the most difficult and or rewarding video game boss that you've ever beaten?
It's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
It's a lot of history to draw upon as well.
Yeah, and you know what was funny? We got a lot of responses to this one very quickly as well, because we only put this one up on Friday. And it kind of proved to me that people always remember bosses that whoop their ass, even if it's been
totally
20 years and you remember it forever. And you kind of, in a strange way, appreciate getting your ass kicked that badly. So you remember the bosses that were challenging and kind of forget about the bosses that were a breeze. So we got some great responses here. The first one is from Patrick Weeks.
Who is that?
He wrote some game called like Mush, 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 or I don't even know how to say it.
I think he wrote a book or something too.
Yeah, he wrote a book or something. Some guy. He says Genshin, the very first fight in Ninja Gaiden 2, 30 plus tries. Reward was him winning anyway, and my dad saving me in a cutscene. Not saying that 30 plus tries for everyone. I played on Acolyte and still got the Indomitable Spirit achievement for many deaths.
Many deaths.
Ninja Gaiden is no joke of a game. I'm actually kind of too terrified to actually try it. So,
really? It's so good.
Yeah, I never really tried Ninja Gaiden too much.
Denise Kwan at Denise Kwan says, in my recent gaming past, I'd have to say fighting Saren in Mass Effect 1 was ridiculous. His shields kept regenerating insanely fast.
Oh, that was such a hard fight.
I just hated that he was fast. And he was, all of a sudden, he became this little, like, creeper that could move very quickly around the arena.
Yeah, jump on the ceiling and, like, crazy.
That fight was a bitch.
Yeah.
All right, so Big J at True RWB says, Alar in World of Warcraft took the guild so many tries, I got the chess piece to boot. I don't play World of Warcraft, so I'm going to leave that to you guys.
I quit before Alar existed, but I do remember the feeling of joy when you would get a new chess piece or something like that. In the old days of raiding, sometimes you would go like weeks and weeks and weeks without getting a single piece of armor for your character.
Oh my god,
dude!
Oh yeah, it was
painful.
It was crazy.
All right, so Justin Banks at Midtown 583, the alien at the end of the first Dead Space game. I remember being being difficult to battle. Oh, yeah. That was a great
game. Yeah. You know, the Dead Space fight from the first game, there was like a boss that was, I guess, like stuck in an airlock or something. Do you remember that from the first Dead Space? It was like a big wall of like tentacles and teeth and shit. Anyway, I got stuck on that boss fight for months and actually had to put the game down because I tried so many times.
Really?
I couldn't beat it. Yeah.
I remember in Dead Space 2, I think there was a boss that appeared in the, pretty much in the command deck of the space shuttle. I think in the space shuttle. And he was just like a big hulking guy and just kind of ran around the whole environment. He was really tough to kill. That's all I remember.
Yeah. I remember that boss. But in Dead Space 3, you have fucking shotguns and. and crazy weapons, so everything's a lot
easier. Like Neo from the Matrix or some
seriously
shit.
All right, next is from Mark D, which is Rage Cage 559 on Twitter, and he says Marauder Shields from Mass Effect 3.
Marauder Shields.
I liked his answer.
I did too. I know,
nice,
it's funny.
To Mark D,
I like it.
Rage in the cage with you.
in the 559.
Yeah. Yes. Jennifer R at Jenny the Pirate says, the final boss battle in Echo the Dolphin took me 18 years to finish that game.
Oh my god.
That is awesome.
I never got that far in Echo. Even as a little kid, I was like bitter and cynical. I'm like, really? A game about a fucking dolphin?
Yeah.
I was like four.
Evo, like, you remember Evo? That was kind of the same way. Like in Evo, you just played an amoeba that evolved into a person. But that was oddly entertaining and difficult.
Hmm. Jeffrey Adams at Trills Tish. I really had to look at that closely. Gray Fox in Metal Gear Solid. Shit was frustrating when I was 12 years old. I just want to put a yo at the end.
Oh my gosh. I remember Gray Fox being super hard. Actually, a lot of those Metal Gear Solid bosses were really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one really cool thing, if you're a fan of Gray Fox, you can actually get the Gray Fox skin for Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which I can never say. But you can get the skin and his sword, and so you can run around as Gray Fox, which is cool.
I feel like we've all tripped up on that today.
I have too.
Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear.
Ash, you should just say Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3.
Oh, man.
All right, Michelle Archer. I'll just jump in. Misha Beans. Another World of Warcraft. Awesome. Ragnaros in vanilla.
Ragnaros.
Cataclysm?
Vanilla. Cataclysm.
In World of Warcraft or Bowser in Super Mario World.
At least you got Bowser, right? Or Bozar in Super Mario World.
Hey, I haven't had my coffee yet.
Yeah. Ragnaros is, oh my gosh. It took my guild forever to kill Ragnaros.
Daniel Nightingale at Sandstorm says just every single Harbinger on Mass Effect 2 on Insanity. That's good to know, because I'm actually gearing up for ME2 Insanity play.
Why would you do that? Haven't you already done it?
No, I'm trying to, I want to 100% all the Mass games, and I need to complete my Insanity Mass 1 play, and then I need to do immediately after that Mass 2 Insanity.
I did the Mass 2 Insanity, and it was one of the hardest things ever.
I played Mass 3 on Insanity on my first playthrough, and I really loved it. So I'm kind of hoping that I like these other ones as well.
You'll see.
Maybe assuming control of this form.
Oh, man. Man, that was like if Sean Connery was...
Yeah. I know, right?
Sean Connery, the Harbinger.
No, actually, Scott made a funny joke when we were talking about PS4. I think it was online. And you know how you can assume control of someone else's player? Yeah. Scott was like, it's the Harbinger. Yeah. Assuming control.
It'd be great if you could assume direct control without the other person knowing.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you just like hijack their shit, and they're just like, what the fuck is happening? Why do I keep jumping into this ravine? That's what I would do.
That's awesome.
Stephanie G at Sigmaru. By the way, you guys should all listen to Team Banana Punch High Command podcast because it's a lot of fun. And Stephanie's on that.
Sweet.
She says Final Fantasy X, Evrey, Mass Effect Saren, final boss of Kingdom Hearts 2. Oh my God, what was it called? Also, double pyramid heads in Silent Hill 2. It's really hard to aim when you're screaming the whole time. That's what she said. What?
Oh no.
I'm sorry if I butcher this name. Argelo Zavala says Ruby weapon Final Fantasy VII and beating Sephiroth with the nail bat and the Buster Sword. I don't know if it was a Ruby weapon, but I remember a buddy of mine trying to beat one of the weapons in Final Fantasy VII. You remember the weapons? They were like these giant hulking.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I ever beat the main weapon.
I think my buddy was showing me there was like a green one that was underwater.
Emerald,
right?
Yeah.
Emerald, yeah. And I remember this is what we did. He had Knights of the Round, which was an awesome summon. You remember that?
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then he had, I guess he had some materia that let him dupe the attacks or whatever. So I think he literally casted Knights of the Round maybe like 32 times, like in one sequence. And we literally left, went and got Taco Bell, came back as this was finishing up, and the thing still didn't die. And then after that, he was like, fuck this, and turned off the console. And that was it. So that was my weapon experience from Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, those things were designed to be pretty much close to invincible. But we'll see a lot of people actually saying that they think the weapons were the hardest.
For sure.
They don't make them like that anymore.
So Carissa Barrows at SJB's Mama, fucking Sephiroth in fucking Kingdom Hearts. Oh my word. When I finally beat him, I literally jumped up and started screaming. Yes, she has some feels about that.
A lot of Kingdom Hearts. A lot of Square Enix answers in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which means Square is just a punishingly evil company. A
lot of Japanese answers, yeah.
Jushin says Psycho Mantis from Metal Gear Solid 1. Didn't know the trick the first time. Do you guys remember the trick?
No.
You don't remember the trick?
Is he the one that put the controller? He's like, put your controller down on the table.
No, it was amazing. Like, he's the first one to read. He would read your memory card.
Yeah, that guy.
I see you've been playing other Konami games. You'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
But he would tell you, he was like, put your controller down. I'm going to move it with my mind.
Yeah, and he would rumble the controller. Yeah. And you could also, the only way to beat him was to like plug your controller into port 2 because he had control over port 1.
Yeah.
So you'd actually have to unplug your controller and plug. It was so genius. That game was so great.
That's awesome.
Psycho Mantis was awesome.
Everything is easy once you know the answer.
Yeah, and that was before like there were like a lot of internet cheats, you know, you'd actually have to like know somebody that knew the secret.
Yeah.
It's great.
Or look it up online.
Nate Hales, who's that guy? At NHales 80, Proto Mechroba from Xenosaga 1. And then there's another answer here. Oh no, it just says, oh, JRPGs, your bosses are so ridiculous. So many forms.
That brings me to my answer.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say just because my wound is still fresh.
Yes, continue. Yeah, we got it. Your wound is fresh.
Fresh from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. But I'm going to say the last 2 hours of that game because it's pretty much a 2-hour boss fight because the boss has so many fucking forms.
It's terrible.
You basically fight like a giant robot, then you fight another giant robot thing, then you fight a guy that's inside the giant robot, then you fight the other form of the guy that's inside the giant robot, then you fight him without a sword, then you fight him with a sword. It's crazy, and it's very, very... challenging. So that's going to be my answer for right now. But obviously, if I were to like search my memory banks, there's going to be some pain for my youth, you know?
Indeed.
Yeah.
So Anna Shaman at Peachy Anna, the fucking Chiron in Witcher 2. Tentacle raped. Gah. I rage quit that boss so many times. When I kicked its ass, I danced.
That thing was hard.
And it really was.
I do have to say that that mechanic, in the past month of that boss fight, the Chiron fight, I've had that exact same boss fight in about three different games where the tentacles come down and you have to dodge them. Then you have to slash the tentacle. Then you have to climb up the tentacle. Then you have to slash the eye. And then you have to like fucking slash the other thing. That same exact fight.
Metal Gear, fucking hard, dude.
Witcher 2, Dead Space. I just did it in Dead Space last night.
In dark mode, if that thing hits you like once, I think that it's it, that you're done. You have to start over.
I can't believe you played that game in dark mode.
Did you build the trap? The trap helps.
It only gets one of the tentacles, right?
Yeah, but I mean like on dark mode, one tentacle is like a fourth of the enemy. You know,
that's
awesome.
That's true.
It's a trap.
All right, Melissa K at the Quad Skater says, Andross, Star Fox 64, I also really hate monkeys.
With the big hands? This is the boss fight right here.
Oh, boy. That's good. Screenshot.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say mine now before someone else takes it, which is going to happen in a minute. But yeah, so mine is definitely the Archdemon in Dragon Age Origins, just because I felt like I didn't realize that there were, what are they, ballistas?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't realize that that was part of the thing, and I was playing as a rogue, I believe. So it's not like I could sling magic spells at the thing. And then having to coordinate, you know, when certain groups come into play, it kind of kicked my ass a little bit. But also just the depth of the story at that point, you know, like, you know, Alistair, like, killed himself for me. Like, that whole situation was so emotionally charged. That it was the most memorable boss fight.
I honestly couldn't beat it. I felt like so stupid. I couldn't even figure out, like, I don't know if I brought the wrong team or I just didn't get it or whatever, but I think I had to beat that game on the easiest setting when I got to that boss.
It's one of the only times that I had to bump the difficulty down.
Yeah.
And until I learned like the methods, but man, it was a war of attrition. Like, you had to have so many potions. You had to just be like ready for that fight.
No.
And if you had already used a lot of your shit up by the time you got there, you were screwed.
Well, and the whole feeling as you're fighting up the castle, right? And you know you're about to go up onto the roof. I mean, Dragon Age Origins has such a great story, and you're so invested with the characters. Like, I actually felt like, for once in my entire life, like, as I was playing a game, I felt like I was going to feel like the wind as the door opened and I went out to see the dragon. Like, I was so into that moment. It was just an amazing thing.
It was disproportionately difficult, and that's the thing that like really threw me, I felt like.
Yeah, it was crazy, crazy hard. It really was. Mm-hmm. And another great thing about that is, you know, you work throughout the entire game to forge these alliances with the different races of the world.
Totally.
To see them show up on the battlefield was really cool. I kind of wish you could have had a little bit more control over them on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Because they just kind of like ran around willy nilly, but seeing like an army of werewolves show up and like fight against the darkspawn was like super cool. Especially like I did like a totally tangent, but I did like a dark playthrough of Dragon Age Origins where I picked all like the bad decisions. So I had like Loghain on my team and like, you know, the werewolves, and I'm like, yeah, this is just fucking rad. It was so cool.
Yeah. I think I played through on every single race, every single, I mean, and I did evil, good. I mean, that's a great thing about Dragon Age, but
yeah.
Okay. So Nora apparently agrees with me, and her handle is Interpreter 13 in Roman numerals. Archdemon in Dragon Age Origins, slaying evil dragons rocks, and the cutscene made me feel so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right. Jacques Major. Cat Jack 1997 says, the first time I took down the Lich King, it was my first expansion boss kill ever, and we got it before Cataclysm came on. I never killed the Lich King. I gave up before that time. So another World of Warcraft. Good answer.
Michael Gamble at Gamble Mike, I think we know that guy, says, how about anything in Dark Souls? Fuck times 100. Did you guys play Dark Souls?
I have not played it yet.
Didn't someone play Dark Souls?
Matt played a little.
Oh, poor Matt.
Why would Matt play that game?
I don't know.
Matt like I don't think likes getting punished in games.
Yeah.
He likes to play for fun. So that's like, I just like, that would be like me like riding a 10 speed around for joy. It's just not something that would happen.
So Jos Hendricks at SJOSZ says Final Fantasy X, Roman numerals, Final Fantasy X Penance, Final Fantasy IX Ozma, Final Fantasy VIII Omega Weapon, Final Fantasy VII Ruby Weapon, harder than Emerald in my opinion, all memorable fights.
A lot of Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Let's hope he doesn't implement any of those ideas into some of the games that he's working on, because I do not want to see anything that hard in any of the titles that he's working on.
And interestingly enough, our buddy Amanda, hey Amanda, at Fluid Fire says, oh man, final the Emerald Weapon, Final Fantasy VII, difficult and rewarding to finally defeat it. I feel old. Well, hey, I just told a story about it, so don't feel old.
Yes. Robert Framering, Mr. Slick, says, Zero from Quake 3 Arena. That's why that whiskey is like virtual spinach. Finally killed him after a few drinks. To see him like pounding whiskey, like, I'm going to get this Zero.
Oh my gosh. Never consider drinking for video games. I only do that for Mass Effect multiplayer.
And I love the Popeye reference. Like, that's awesome.
It's pretty funny.
Lord Oda, Demon King Oda, Ninja Gaiden. I always say Gaiden, and I know it's wrong. Ninja Gaiden 2, final boss, and the 99 Knights final boss. Oh my fucking god! There's been a lot of f bombs in these. Have you noticed that?
Yeah,
people are still mad.
People are fired up.
Pisses me off. Everyone's still pissed off about this.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell mine? I haven't done mine yet.
Yeah, please.
Yes.
I know I've said it before, but the boss at the end of Super Metroid, it's not like necessarily difficult, but it's very rewarding in what happens at the end of the game. So do you guys know?
No.
Super Metroid?
It's like 20 years old, so you can go ahead and spoil it for me.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So in Super Metroid, you fight Mother Brain, obviously, who turns into like this giant, like sort of dinosaur-sized Mother Brain. And what ends up happening is that you're fighting Mother Brain, and then she intentionally starts to kill you, like it's meant to happen. And then right as she about to deliver the death blow, a Metroid that you had saved earlier in the game comes, swoops in, and sacrifices itself to save you, and then supercharges you with all of its energy, like as it dies from being attacked.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talking about that a long time ago.
Yeah, and then pretty much like the game gets like all serious and dark, and then all of a sudden you like slowly rise up again. And then your arm cannon and like shoots these crazy ass fucking super rainbow beams that like bash her head up against the wall, like Whiplash style, every time you shoot her with it. And I remember that being like highly satisfying. And the thing that made it even better, which is a part that I've never told before, was that when I did that for the first time, I actually had a friend of mine, like a, you know, neighborhood friend that was in the room with me, who was like a really excitable person. So like when that happened and I got up and started shooting, like he was like screaming in my living room. He was like, oh my God, you fucking kill that guy. You get him. Like dancing around like we were in like a rap battle or something. And I just like dissed somebody real, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'll never forget that. It was
that
a great.
That used to be the best when we were all kids and like the whole online connectivity thing didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And you just have people over to play. Like I would go over to my friend Pete's house and we would just like play games for 2 days straight.
Handing
the controller back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So much
fun. I did that. Yeah.
Awesome.
We played Secret of Mana that way, marathon session, just passing controller around.
It's the way to go.
Okay. So last but not least, we have Eric at eChap33. He says, Grim Reaper from Castlevania on the NES, no saves, no password. After your lives ran out, it was game over. Lots of cursing. And that is certainly true of these games, and I think you could put Ghosts and Goblins up there too.
Yeah,
as part of
do you remember when you could only have like two continues? That was horrible.
It was brutal. I think now like companies would get sued if they did that. They'd be like, this game is unbeatable, and they would like get lawsuits.
Yeah, you could throw another one in there too, like DuckTales. That was
a hard game. That was
oddly
fun.
Punishing for DuckTales, right? You'd never expect that.
For real. All right, guys, that about wraps things up for episode 94 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Facebook at /NerdAppropriate. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate, Google+, Goodreads, everywhere. were written on the bathroom stalls of most toilets and most male bathrooms. For a good time, call Nerd Appropriate.
Oh, no.
You can contact us individually and personally. We accept all forms of mail. M-A-L-E, what?
Woo!
Write us at ash at nerdappropriate.com, Matt at nerdappropriate.com, Hillary1L at nerdappropriate.com, or Scott at nerdappropriate.com. Big shout out this week, of course, to Jimmy Hinson and Big Giant Circles for our theme song. And if you haven't gone on over to the good old Kickstarter yet, he's actually scoring a new game by the name of
Echo something, right?
There Came an Echo. So yes. There Came an Echo
is what
he's working on, and they're in the middle of their Kickstarter campaign now. It is a fun looking RTS game with the voice of Will Wheaton. And so definitely go ahead and check out There Came an Echo. And we will be back next week with episode 95.
Whoa. Can't believe it.
It's crazy.
That's huge.
It is.
Huge. Not like huge as in big, just like a big deal, right? I'm not trying to say you're huge.
Are you calling me enormous?
No.
It's a huge episode.
So give me a countdown.
In 5, 4, 3.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Rated NA episode 94 for the Nerd Appropriate website. And I totally screwed that up.
And take 2.
Hey, everyone. This is Hillary with the Rated. Oh, God. Why would I say my name?
No.
Why would I say my name? Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Rated NA podcast episode 94 for the
5, 4, 3.
Oh, I'm going. I thought we gave this up.